Greetings, friends. I am Ian McKenzie, founder of The Mythic Masculine, and I'm delighted to be here in conversation with a special guest today, Jumana Sophia, who, among many things, is the founder of Her Mystery School, which is a temple 8 years in the making that has become global in scope. And we are here to talk about the journey of her and founding this school, as well as my own parallel birthing process of a program for men called The Deep Masculine, which we'll get to a bit later. But first, welcome, Jumana.
Thank you, Ian. It's really sweet to be here with you.
Now, we also have a mutual friend, an acquaintance that is worth naming here, Alex King Harris, who I met Alex on Salt Spring about maybe 6 or 7 years ago now, and was, of course, delighted by his musical talents and just, you know, spirit and the rest. And I found out a bit later that, of course, you had a long-term relationship with Alex. Yeah. There's lots of, you know, interesting threads that wove you two together, and also the separation, but also you've kept in touch and developed, understand, a deep friendship. But that was initially how this came about, that Alex was really intrigued by leaning into some kind of masculine, mythic masculine school. And then, of course, he knew about your offering, which you've been running now again for 8 years. And so that's what I think was the impulse to bring us together and see if there's any kind of connections might be sparked, which they have, which I'm delighted by as well. But I'd love for you to speak a little bit about, yeah, the journey of your own process with birthing Her Mystery School.
Yeah, you know, it's funny that you mentioned Alex, because he and I really grew up together. We were married for a period of time, and he was a big part of me becoming a woman and learning a lot that ended up being part of birthing Her Mystery School. So, you know, what happened at the beginning was that I had a course that just went gangbusters. It was on Dalium. It was called Break the Grip of Past Lovers, and it was about releasing past lovers and also about, you know, real residency as a woman. And when that happened, I realized that it was just touching one little piece of what was possible for women, and that it needed something much bigger to actually escort women through the entirety of the becoming that they were actually in. So Her Mystery School grew out of that on that level, on the level of what it was intending to serve. It was intending to serve the deep feminine, which is, you know, very much a revelation and an upwelling in women that takes time. It's an unfurling. So the 9 months together and all the realms of deep feminine that we go into are supporting that. And then there was also, for me personally, it was a time in my life where I needed to understand, you know, life. I had followed this thread through so much life at that point, and I'd raised temples and been in the healing arts and married and had a kid. I mean, all these things. And there was something that I needed. I remember thinking to myself, I want to write my thesis. You know, what is it that I've been following? And I realized it was sacred womanhood. I realized that it was, you know, in all these paths, what I was needing and what I was bringing together was, what is it to be a woman as a sacred path? Just to embrace that and to understand and hold a treasure house for all the sensibilities that are kind of latent, sometimes unspoken and unrevealed in our world generally. So that's what it was. And it started as a 9 month journey, and it's grown now, you know, it's 3 years long. So there's a second year now, there's a third year women ordaining with me, and it's been amazing. I think this call, and it's interesting, as you and I have talked about where we see the intersection or the meeting of our mutual work or our respective works. It's like, even when you bring forward the deep feminine, you know, I'm watching all these women gather around all over the world, all different kinds, all ages, all everything, sex workers, celibate nuns, you know, mothers, it doesn't matter. And they all acknowledge that they're gathering on around the same flame, but that it reflects into them in all these ways. And so there's something about, for sure, depth, you know, and really wanting to nourish and sit in the depth of womanhood with other women underneath of the story. And, you know, and I know in our conversations, what we've touched on is that's, I feel like, also what you're moving toward with your men's work is, what is that? What is the depth that whatever that is, you know. And I, it's like, you can't really, what I've found with the school and with the women, it's, you have to be willing to sit in the place where you can't actually talk about what it is. You can gesture toward it. You can know that you're all sitting around it, but it's a mystery. It's ever revealing. I feel like that's what you're coming to with your work with the men as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you for that. You know, I recognize, I think probably a shared understanding in that these kinds of temples for an initiation into these mysteries, right? These yeah. undercurrents, mythology, you know, the archetypal realms, like this all seems like it was the role of culture, right? Intact culture. Yeah. And in the absence of the decimation of culture by modern society and the, you know, capitalist juggernaut as a kind of anti-culture, which is, again, a big conversation we could get into. That's largely the understanding that Stephen Jenkinson has implored to me, a teacher of mine. There's a sense that in the absence of that, of course, that this is sort of, this is a response to that. It's this revivification of these kinds of spaces and the necessity of them, actually, because the, yeah, what I found for as a man growing up as well, right? I before I discovered the book Iron John, which was credited with kickstarting the mythopoetic men's movement back in the sort of late 80s, early 90s by Robert Bly, who kind of retrieved an old story from the Grimm's brothers and then used that actually to illuminate the inner landscape of a man recognizable to men in modern society. Until that happened, right, I was like, this is even possible, right? That an older man in this case could offer some kind of eldership around my inner landscape, right? And that it would be recognizable, rendered through myth and archetypes, and all, right? So just, of course, it blew my mind. I mean, it's a revelation for a lot of men who then encounter this. But the part of it too, for me, was like, oh, but it didn't come to me through a culture that had the elders intact that would say, okay, now is your time, son, you know, when you're 14 or 15 or whatever it is. And that poverty actually became apparent only when, right, I started to discover it kind of on my own and then found others. And so in many ways too, this desire to reenact or to recreate in a new way these spaces of initiatory education and integration, it seems like, for men and for women, and even for those, of course, that don't fit within a gender binary. I mean, there's different kinds of medicine that everyone's bringing. But I think that this is, to me, like a fundamental understanding of the requirement of these kinds of things, right. Especially because, right, in the absence of initiation, mentorship, all this stuff, you know, people are just left to kind of, you know, wander through the mayhem of their lives and wonder, you know, where was this? Maybe vaguely, you know, somewhere in the back of their understanding of goneness. So just wanted to lay that out too, a bit of the context for what I understand, of course, why these spaces are really important.
Yeah, I feel that. I feel that, you know, one of the things I often say to the women and that I just continue to experience with the school is that we're touching into a lineage and a wisdom stream that's interrupted but intact. You know, and when you're, as you're speaking, it's the same feeling of there, yet this thing that cultures and people and men and women have touched into over time in their ways is still there. And so, you know, these things, her mystery school and the mythic masculine, it's this, you know, it feels like the mastery of it is to be able to sit back and actually open to that and let it well up now into this moment. You know, the mystery schools have been around for a long time, but the mystery itself doesn't ever go anywhere. So we're just, you know, we happen to get to be a part of an ancient and very wide lineage and an ancient, very wide reality in which we're just touching something that already exists. That's what I often feel, you know. So it's like with the school and right inside of a context, I often say we're orphaned and we're exiled. And that's part of what we're dealing with. You know, we're dealing with amnesia. Kind of a culturally inherited amnesia, in my case, particularly around what is it to be a woman? What are the sensibilities that make it what are the skillful means for that, right? They do exist, we just weren't taught them. And kind of rediscovering that, remembering it, encountering the amnesia, the grief of it, also the relief and the joy and the healing of coming into touch with it again, but then also, you know, what I found with the school, and I'm interested in how this is also going to kind of grow with your work, is that, and then we have to get really sober and really honest about, because we didn't have elders and because we're finding this again, we make mistakes. You know, there are, there isn't anyone to be like, well, you know, we didn't do it that way, and here's why. You know, here's why we held this or that, you know, rule or this guideline is because of this. You know, so that's what I've noticed too. And actually something I really appreciate about the women who come into the school, there's a real, it's a shameless container. And I also feel like that's something you're creating with the men, is a container. It's just shameless. It's open and there is no shame. And therefore then we can, there is actually the possibility of acknowledging where we, where we're not yet ripe, right? Where we're a little immature still, and where we may have been wrong. And that has felt actually like a very significant part of the remembrance through the school as it's gone on.
Well, you bring up a good point, which is what you, so you use the word shameless, and the way I might translate that is like everything can be brought, right? Without sort of condemnation or judgment, that there's a way to say, you know, bring questions around, you know, struggles or, I don't know, patterns and things, and that there's a place to say, hey, like, I need help with this, or like, I just want to reveal and be received. I think that's, an essential fundamental quality. And then I think the other piece is being able to, to have a place to make contact without, without the condemnation, without the shame. Because if I look at something like Me Too, for example, right, the whole Me Too movement, which I would, I can understand it through one lens as a kind of a archetypal no from the feminine to the masculine, right? With the sort of extrapolated through the organism of humanity, right? As one side is predating on the other, and the feminine side saying, that's it, no more, right? Like, we're done here. No more of this. That to me was a fundamental energy of the Me Too. Now, the problem with that is, of course, that then it flips over into a kind of cancel culture and a kind of banish all of the bad parts of the organism, right? Of men, not to say that there shouldn't be consequence for men who have, you know, severely transgressed. It's not that, but in a climate of, it's like if you admit wrongdoing or you know are singled out and you're banished, like that doesn't really help the health of the overall organism. And so there needs to be often a lot of work done in these polarized spaces, right? I find. That is necessary to then to be able to meet each other from a different place, right? From a different grounded place that can kind of hold these bigger, almost transpersonal energies, right? As well as the personal. And that's not understood well, I think, unless you've been steeped in these kinds of realms and teachings, right? And frameworks.
Right, because we're brothers and sisters at the end of it all. And if we don't get there together, we don't get there at all, you know, anywhere good. That's how I would want to say that. And also, I think you're pointing to something really important, which is that, you know, the culture and the overculture in general, it polarizes. And then you've got nothing. You're just swinging on a pendulum back and forth. And but in order to come around that into something that can bring it into resolution, you have to have things like this. You have to have places of depth where you're connecting to something bigger than yourself. Because, you know, when I look at the Me Too movement or many of the polarized things that are happening in our world right now, I don't see much connection to that which is bigger than self. You know, it's like when we talk about it in the school, what are we doing? What are we cultivating? We're cultivating a connection to a wisdom that is deeper than we are. And older than we are, that we can trust, that comes around all the things that we go through as a woman and brings us into right relationship, right proportion, right timing, you know, right action, and actually mends the world rather than further fracturing it. So there's a way that I hear you, because it's there's so many things that have this kind of pure intention or this important archetypal intention in them that kind of quickly just become fracturing to the world and fracturing to everything, rather than bringing what I think it's really meant to bring, which is, you know, us coming into greater harmony, kind of, obviously. You know, it's just not easier said than done, obviously, but yeah.
Well, this leads me a bit to my origin around this stuff, which was, I mean, I mentioned finding the book Iron John. That was when I was about 35, which again is an auspiciously significant number, named actually in the book. As a time when, for a man, often, you know, the initial, they call it a Peter Pan idealism burns and crashes and, you know, relationships and marriages end, as it did for me as well, jobs end, you know, all of the great intentions can kind of, they turn to ash, right? And this is the introduction to what Bly calls the road of ashes, right, within the book. And for me as well, that there was a something I had to reconcile with, which was a kind of fundamental distrust of men, right? Because as a younger boy, looking out at the world and seeing like, what, you know, how did things get this way? How did things get so, polarized or full of conflict and war and violence and rape and pillage? And I was like, man, there must be something fundamentally wrong with men, right? Like the sensitive part of me that was like, whoa, I do not want to be that, right? And of course, you know, that kind of boy hero, which is also a normal part of adolescence, that was the stance that felt right. It was like, you know, some rebel, some become sort of antagonistic to the system. And for me, I was like, I'm going to be a nice guy. You know, I don't want to participate in this. I'm going to be an ally, you know, all this kind of stuff. But what that meant was that I basically fragmented myself from my own masculinity, thinking that that was the best way to be an ally to women. And it meant that the way that I even spatially sometimes describe this to other men is, it's the difference between, let's say, so a man is doing something, you know, behaviorally that is just not right. It's not a right relationship, you know, not right behavior. And as a man, you can either, you know, side up next to the woman, point at the man and be like, yeah, you're terrible. You know, like, stop doing that terrible thing, right? Like, we're on the right side. That guy's terrible. Or, right, and this is what the journey was for me, and I think for a lot of men, was to go stand up next to the man and say, hey, brother, we can do better, right? So it's the calling in versus, you know, calling out. It's the, you know, seeing that work is actually to be, yeah, it's to be together and to do this work together, right? As opposed to, you know, cancel each other. And so that journey as well, though, that, I think a lot of men have that too, this fundamental distrust as well, and this sense of that there's a flaw in men. And then they separate themselves from it. And then they have to come to this process of reclamation. I call it like a foundation of reclamation. And recognizing the inherent nobility and medicine that masculinity has, actually. In Pat McCabe might call it the great hoop of life. That there's actually an inherent necessity, of course, for this to be brought forth. It's just the structures that we live in, for men and women, but they kind of employ in a distorted way these natural gifts that actually end up creating more destruction, right? And then, of course, if we look and say, oh, inherently masculinity is flawed, then, you know, there's no way out of that, right? It's just essentially damage control, which is, I think, a lot of what people, well-meaning people, land on. They're like, oh, masculinity is inherently flawed. Let's just make it less bad, right? As opposed to, wait, there's actually a kind of a cultural loss here that is actually why the black hole has sucked in, right, all of the inherent noble aspects of masculinity.
Right. You just like sent my mind in like five different directions with all of that. Thank you. One of the things where I loved it, because it is one of the most important things, you know, it's one of the most important things for me in relationship to the mythic masculine, or, you know, is that as I've gone deeper and deeper with the school, and as the women have gone deeper and deeper with me, we just end up having more and more and more respect and love and desire for the actual masculine. Like, it doesn't, the deeper we go into what it really, like the depth of the feminine and what that really is, the more we don't have the same desperate kind of need or grasping for men or the masculine, but we also come to this place where we deeply acknowledge how much we need it, you know, how much we need it to open places of ourselves, you know, that are waiting for the penetrative force of that. And also just how much the whole dialogue, the whole exchange of nobility and soul and protection and reciprocal respect and the mysteries coming together, it requires a certain amount of both of us, you know, both men and women, coming to terms with the incredible force that moves through us. You know, I feel like sometimes when I was hearing you describing masculinity right now, it's so powerful. It's so powerful. It can be used to destroy. It can, you know, that force. Women have the same, not the same, but they have a very powerful force. And I watch all of us in the school as we gradually purify our relationship to that force, the force of our sexuality, seduction, condescension, you know, the force of wisdom, and when it kind of suffocates rather than sits back and allows, you know, there's all these things. And so there's, for me, a lot of, you know, with you and, you know, connecting with you and looking at this relationship, I am very interested in the places where we meet, where it's like, oh yeah, look, you have that too. We over here in her mystery school, we have to deal with massive forces moving through us all the time. And when we don't get on top of it and we're not containing it and we don't have skillful means, it goes wrong. Our lives go wrong. We make the wrong decisions. We hurt other people. Women do that. And look, you've got the same thing. You've got this potency, this ancient potency that is, and I know it because I've been lovers with men, you know, and I've also watched my son grow up and be finding his way. It's so powerful what's in you. And it, what it is to direct that and to be disciplined and skillful around it, that's, you know, that's exciting. And exactly, you know, there's an absence, there's an amnesia in the culture around just saying, look, this is true. And here are the steps, here are the ways in which you're going to be able to be with this force. Right? Because I love men, Ian. Beautiful. You already know that. I have a deep devotion to men, and I have a deep devotion to the nobility that I feel like we can share, and the way that we can kind of mutually evoke the soul and the real nobility of each other, men and women. So, yeah.
Yeah, thank you for that. You know, it strikes me that this portal of Eros, right, is one that is, I mean, it's some of the richest territory, certainly, that you and I seem to be both exploring. Of course, you know, we're rounding out an approach to Beltane here in the Northern Hemisphere, which is, of course, the time when, you know, the Earth is flourishes forth with the oncomingness of the year. It's often in, at least I know in Celtic traditions, it's often a time as well of fertility and revelry and, you know, jumping over fires. And I experienced a kind of version of this at actually Tamara in Portugal. This is a community, of course, I've spent many years making a film about. It's called The Village of Lovers. But that was the first time actually I'd experienced a Beltane ritual where, in this case, the men and women of the village separated out and spent a bit of time in their own, you know, polarized energy in a way. And there was, you know, some mentorship, and elders were saying, okay, this is how we're approaching this time of year and like what the energy is, and just, you know, stoking that fire there. And then the women do the same, and then met each other ritually across two bonfires and actually sang to each other, right, in this way that was like, you know, spicy and kind of erotic, but like, and again, it was transpersonal, meaning it wasn't really about any particular, it wasn't one person, one guy saying, oh, that hot one across the fire, I'm gonna, you know, just talk to her. It wasn't that. It was actually, again, a much broader, the men of the village courting the women of the village at this time, that is also the energy of the earth, like the earth itself awakening into this, you know, rich, fertile, passionate time. And in that case, you know, they made their way to each other and ended up in this beautiful, you know, engaging dance, and the pregnant women there who were like blessed with honey water and stuff. I mean, it was just, it was too good. And for me, like, this is the role of culture, right? To draw us into these ways of remembering and entrainment to these energies that are drawn from the earth herself. And so I see that in the absence of these things, again, we're kind of left to our own devices, right? To kind of navigate these big archetypal forces, you know, naming one here is Eros. Like, it's massive, and it's so much bigger than sexual love, you know, sort of personal sexual love. And oftentimes we need spaces of, collective, like building a collective vessel in order to actually navigate and find orientation in these spaces. And I'd love to hear some of your own experiences in this.
Yeah, you know, I mean, one thing that comes to me is, as you're sharing that, is right, that we're, the whole idea is to actually get into, to rejoin with these forces that are bigger and ancient and non-personal, but also that inform the personal. One of the things that I've, back in the day when I wrote Break the Grip of Past Lovers, and even in the school, one of the things we talk about a lot is that, and it, this is where it gets really confusing for people, and I know for women especially, even though the culture doesn't acknowledge it, and there's no place for it, and there's no words for it, it's still happening. You know, if we're talking about Eros, for instance, women will have these, like, you know, and I'm sure men have it too, but I just know all the women's stories, but they'll have these experiences that are just beyond the personal. They are soulful. They are ancient in sexuality. They'll say, I feel like I touched God, or, you know, whatever it is. And they won't know how to place it. They won't know what to do with that. And it'll be, you know, it'll get confusing with the man himself who maybe didn't even touch that with them. It's like there's this, I've watched it in my own life, and I watch it happen in the women, that it's going to pop up no matter what. We're going to get overshadowed. It's going to move through us. We're going to touch these things regardless. Doesn't matter if the culture forgot it. The issue then, so it, like I said, it never goes away, but the issue then is we don't know what we're touching. And we don't know what to do with that. And it's too easy then to just not have anywhere to place it, right? So it's, I find it, you know, challenging. And I know at one point with the school, I was looking back on it and I was like, oh, I see what I did here. I launched it, you know, I was awakening when I was, you know, 18 years old, and I just launched into life, and the amount of mistakes I made and the amount of confusion and the amount of just like, I don't know, I guess I go here now. And I don't know, I pick up this here and that here, you know, by the time I created this school, I was like, oh, I see what I did in a way from a deep in my heart is I don't want women to go through that. I want to make, I want to bring together all the things. So it's, as you're coming into this, all of this, there's actually some guidance, at least what I've been able to find. I feel like that's part of what you're also bringing through for the men is this, I call it a treasure house, you know, but a dwelling place of remembrance, right? Just so that's not so hard. You know, the amount of women that I know who feel like they're crazy, or they act crazy, or they get confused, or they get themselves in bad situations because they don't understand the powerful experiences they're having. It happens a lot.
Well, I'm curious then for the men, because I know, you know, many of these women have partners that maybe are curious, you know, what's going on in the school, have their own questions. Yeah. I know you've also run a couple of councils with some of the men that are connected to the women in the school. And I'd be curious what bubbled for the men in terms of what you noticed, you know, the questions they were bringing, the curiosities, what they were longing for, perhaps for something for them to themselves to experience.
Yeah. The men who came to the council, it was so beautiful. It really was. There were two councils, and oh gosh, what all was in there? You know, all of them were basically, they were yearning for depth. That's one of the things that I noticed. They were yearning for depth and they didn't have, I mean, it wasn't, many of them were connected to women in the school, and they had seen the women changing and growing and wanted to be, you know, wanted to more understand that. But a lot of them had this very sincere kind of like, look, I just want to understand how to be with. One of them had this great phrase, he called it like priestess problems or like a priestess challenge, where he was like, you know, my woman is exploring all this depth and all these things, and I will encounter these things. She'll encounter these experiences, and I call it a priestess challenge because I don't know how to be with it. So, I mean, what came from that was a lot of the men really just yearning for the depth of themselves, and also wanting, a lot of the expression was they wanted to more deeply respect and evoke that. You know, a little bit of the terrain we touched on too, though, was from their perspective, you know, how they wanted to show up as kings in the lives of their women and all of this. And then they would run into these things where their women are asking, are demanding them to be a king, like simultaneously saying, I want you to be a king and I'm going to emasculate you at the same time. Right. So there is this, you know, there was also this understanding of like, yeah, right. There are skillful means with which we evoke each other in that place. And right. And so those were a couple of the things, and just a real yearning to touch something deeper than what we normally touch was present. Yeah.
Well, that maps well, I think, too, with the journey that myself and my collaborator, Deus Forte, have been co-creating over the last few months. You know, we've been in our own cauldron. And what we found is, again, this tracks with the inquiry that I myself also have been on, and something I first heard and a book, it's called Beyond the Hero, which is actually tales, essentially like tales beyond the initiatory time from adolescent to adult. This was a collection of stories by an American author who collected other mythology, other folk tales, that gave a bit of insight into like beyond, what's beyond this initial, you know, the hero to the sort of adult. And what was fascinating in there, he says that a lot of men have, they go through this sequence, and the sequence is an initial fear and fascination with the feminine, right? An initial fear and fascination. And then, of course, that, you know, a lot of the initial men's work I've saw, I think over the last few decades has really focused on this, because from this face of, you know, fear is like, whoa, I don't understand this. It's mysterious. It's a bit scary. But yet I'm fascinated by it. I'm drawn to it, you know, both erotically and also, you know, a lot of confused feelings around it. Even one's own, a man's own emotional landscape, often growing up in a culture that, again, doesn't model a lot of healthy emotional expression for men as well, like that, those realms of the feminine. So that's been like a lot of the work that, and even today, that a lot of men's work is doing. And you might hear the phrase, right? Man needs to connect with his feminine, more inner feminine. And of course, there's a backlash that I think is often misunderstood, where there's a whole part of the ecosystem, right, of men's work and men's work critiques that's like, we don't need more feminine men. We need more masculine men. Bring back the patriarchy. That's what's missing. And I see that strongly as a reaction, right? Not really an integrated alternative or an integrated sort of pathway beyond. It doesn't address the core issues, which, you know, again, if from a deeper understanding, if a man is integrated in his masculine and feminine, like hallelujah, right? That's actually called range, right? Like range of expression and access. But then beyond that, that's what I'm curious about and have been curious about is not that somehow I've, you know, I personally have arrived. I'm like, great, check, you know, the box of the, you know, inner feminine, totally intact. Not at all. But there's something that Alan B. Chinnan says. He says, beyond this fear and fascination of the feminine, there lies something else. And he calls it the deep masculine. And this is something that, again, this is what the journey that, you know, Deus and I have been co-creating initially, right, with the three-month initial inquiry into this territory, which will probably go into something longer, like your school, into the future. But that this territory of the shadow, eros, sex, myth, somatics, like all of these tools being deployed to be the first entry into this territory is very exciting for us as guides, you know, mythosomatic guides, but also for the men that we're calling in to join us on this journey. Because I do think it's actually quite edgy territory, you know, beyond a lot of what's being offered out there now, that at least, you know, I can see and seems to be the case.
Yeah, you know, and I think that it goes back to that thing of we're asking for revelation. When you come to something deep, when you say, no, deep masculine, you know, it's like what it's always and will always be a little bit beyond. It'll be a little deeper than what you've had before, a little bit beyond what you've had before. So it's that willingness to sit at a mystery and actually listen for it. It's like what I say with the women. I'm like, why don't we, instead of thinking we know what a woman is, why don't we just every moment ask, what is woman right now? You know, why don't we learn how to actually get in contact with that and listen to the living pulse of it? And I feel like that's a lot of what you guys are going to be coming around. And it's going to go beyond all the ideas. All the ideas. What's feminine? What's masculine? It's to actually sit with what is and be educated. You know, I feel like that's also part of it. You know, there's an approach. I always call it the deep feminine approach in the school, but there is an approach to any mystery. And it's you go and you sit at the feet of it. And you allow yourself to be educated by it. I mean, I'm interested. I love that kind of description of the journey of the initial fear and fascination. And then where does that go once that matures? I feel like for me, and, you know, as when I talk to the men and in general with this whole kind of inquiry, the word that comes again and again is nobility. You know, for me, it's like, look, how do you know when you're on it? It makes you a more noble human being. Do you become a more noble woman? Do you become a more noble man? Are you ensouled? You know, that it's really not, in some ways, it's that simple, at least for me. That's the question. And yeah, that's what to me, that's what depth brings. It brings a level of integrity because now you are encountering something that is that, you want to be in integrity at the feet of.
I love that. I almost hear something like the event horizon of what's happening, of life itself, right?
Right.
And that might be a beautiful place, though, to find a way to close our conversation now, just as this initial wading into this territory. And one, the her mystery school, I understand, right? They go in 9-month cycles, and I understand that the you know, current cycle is happening, but that the doors will open again. Maybe you could speak a bit to that, as well as I know you have a multitude of other offerings that women can just attend it, you know, as they come up. But maybe if you could speak to that.
Yeah, the school, we are in mid cycle right now. We start a cycle every September for 9 months, and it's, you know, year one, year two, and year three for women who want to ordain. And then there are offerings throughout the year. It's all at hermysteryschool.com. I can keep it simple like that, but that's what we do, and we all journey mm-hmm. together for 9 months.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. Mm-hmm. And for men who are called by this conversation and interested to join myself and Deus for the inaugural 3-month Deep Masculine Journey, it begins April 11th, and they can find all info, I'll put in the show notes, but themythicmasculine.com is a great place to go as well to find your way there and apply to be part of this first cohort, which we're very excited to launch very soon.
I'm very excited about it. Yeah, I'm really, really grateful that you guys are doing this. Yeah.
Mm. Well, let's both splunk into the cave of mysteries and then return after and share what we've learned.
I look forward to so much more with you, Ian. Thank you.
Thanks, Jemima.